You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Devin Reyna. Devin, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Devin, we're going to talk about your show, Abscissa, at Uprise Art, and I want to ask a few things about it, but let's begin with the title, Abscissa or Abscissa. Tell me about that. I mean, this is a two-person show that has a relationship between the art, between you and Ariel Zamora. How do you see the title of that show, Abscissa, in terms of your work?
Yeah, you know, I was lucky enough to work with Ariella to come up with some titles. And so we went through a large variety of different words and titles to go through. And Abscissa seemed to fit for both of our work. And, you know, it translates to something, it's a mathematical term. It's relating to the x-coordinate of a point and its distance from the y-axis, measured parallel to the x-axis. And so I thought that this was something that was relevant to both of our work being kind of geometric and having these rigid straight lines. And I like this idea of a word that has a surface sort of appeal. You know, it sounds pretty or something. There's these associations you have with it, but you might not know exactly what it means. And so I kind of like that idea of a title that maybe not everyone understands or interprets directly.
I like that too. And let's talk about how your work is produced. I mean, I want to talk so much about like the imagery themselves, and for me, it's like optical effects. But since we're talking about Abscissa and that kind of approach, how is your work made? You're using a kind of set of rules to begin with, right? In terms of how you begin a composition, or are you sketching first? Those rules, how does that work?
Right. So I'll generally initiate each one of my pieces using a two-dimensional pencil grid across the surface using inch format. And this provides a sort of skeletal structure that I'll then use to map marks of wax pastel, or essentially water-soluble crayons that I'm working with. And I'll follow a self-directed prompt doing that. So I'll generally go from top left to bottom right, similar to reading or writing. And I'm interested in how little things like that will find their way into the final image, like the tiny little details in every decision that you make when you apply these colors. But so after I'll do this basically drawing on the canvas, and it's raw canvas that I'm working with, I'll then manipulate it with water, which causes the precisely drawn marks to bleed and merge with one another. And this palette of colors that I began with kind of turns into a spectrum of colors as they merge and blend. And they stain the canvas. And so it's this sort of idea of making a drawing and kind of collapsing it and destroying it or agitating it with water and allowing the physicality of evaporation and saturation to move the pigments across the fibers of the canvas. And I like being able to work with these materials and listen to these traits to sort of develop and see what happens in the final image and not really go into it knowing exactly what I want it to look like.
So there's almost an element of, I mean, printmaking isn't quite it, but there's an element of surprise that's happening with this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so to go through some of the works, which are really so they're one thing photographed and another thing to see in person, but let's begin with Nemesis. This is a
yeah.
Work that seems to have a kind of grid within a grid, but what's remarkable to me about all of these is that, you know, it's even though you described the process, which is why I started off with that, it seems to the sense of space is really unclear. Whether I'm like going into it or it's coming out at me, you know. So yeah, let's talk a little bit about Nemesis, a painting there in terms of space, because this is different than the others. I mean, it's a little close to Blue Curtains, but it's very different than Observable Universe, and we'll talk about both of those. But Nemesis, yeah. when that starts off, you're also thinking about palette and everything, because this has something about this is a very different optical effect than the other two.
Yeah, you know, I did go into this painting knowing that I wanted to work with an interior square that sort of fought with or had some disagreement with the exterior space. And, you know, with this new body of work, I really started pushing into using tape and marking off areas to be able to create boundaries that have this sort of, you end up with this line that isn't really made or drafted with a line. You know, it's made there only because it's two opposing sides, if that makes sense. And in this piece, yeah. I think something that interests me with what you're talking about with space, you know, when I work with a line like that, where it's just these two opposing areas, there's no front and there's no back. And when you look at it, the atmospheric quality of the colors and pigments, I feel like they force you to look for space. And having the lines and the boundaries kind of cause that space to just be suggested, but not really be there.
I like that. Yeah, I mean, there's something different since I've seen it. There's something quite different between seeing this, and this happens with different works of art to a different extent, but there's something different with seeing it and, you know, in person and seeing it online, right? There's photograph does something to it. Details of this image that we're talking about, you know, change how we're looking at it or what we're seeing. I mean, you know, what do you think about that? Because it's such a strange thing about so much work being online that some work looks completely different online than it does in person. And I'm not saying these do, but it's quite significant. Some of the optical effects that I found in person are different when I'm looking at it online, and the kind of matte quality of some of them, of course, changes as well. What do you think about those two differences, or am I a little bit off there?
You know, I think being able to see work online and seeing it in person, I guess, you know, I come from it with a design background, product design background, and I'm always thinking about how basically I'm given an object and an audience and a set of opportunities, you know, and you get to kind of play and tweak with those opportunities. And when you are showing something online or an image, you do get some affordances with what you're able to tweak or how you want it to appear, what kind of context it's in. But to see these pieces in person is really important to me just because of how materiality is important to my practice. You know, I'm oftentimes trying to listen to really small or insignificant or seemingly insignificant qualities and materials to be able to incorporate them into a larger piece and figure out how they can kind of suggest form without me suggesting form. And so I think being able to work with an audience in person showing an object and the materiality of these canvases is important to me. You know, I'm not really working with three-dimensional paint. I'm working with staining the canvas, and I really like this idea of being able to have this perfectly flat surface that ends up being the plane with the image on it.
Yeah, I like that too. I mean, the staining is what's so interesting too, because initially I thought it was a kind of watercolor process. You know, it has almost that feeling, especially the edges of it. But it's not. The staining though has a look like watercolors, right? I mean, and when you start these, do you make smaller versions of them? I think I saw an image of you looking at a series of smaller versions on a table, and those also look almost like watercolors, but that's not the way you work, right? You're not ever using watercolors. You're always using this kind of staining method, even when making smaller works that may turn into larger works.
Yeah, that's right. I'll oftentimes work with these tests, and that's probably what you're referring to. And I'm not really using watercolors or a colored water that I'm applying to the canvas. I'm really applying these wax pastels by hand as though I'm drawing or drafting it across the grid. And then after that, I'll go in with water and dissolve this pigment and allow it to disperse according to how it wants to saturate the fibers of the canvas.
And the title of that, Nemesis. I don't know if the titles relate to something specific, but I'd love to hear about that before I ask you about the next one.
Yeah, I'd love to tell you about Nemesis. It's called that just because of that initial intention of having an interior space and an exterior space, that square within a square. And if you look closely, I mean, I don't really tell people this that much, but the interior square actually has a different color palette on the inside than the outside. And all the colors, it's the same number of colors, and all the colors are very similar, but not one repeats from the interior to the outterior, or the exterior, sorry.
I like ulterior better.
Seems to
work.
Pretty artistic, right?
Yeah. Nothing wrong with making up words. I like that. So that's a really interesting thing. So that palette doesn't repeat, but that's hard to see initially, as you're saying. Maybe that's why you haven't mentioned it before. People assume that the palette is repeating, right? That the purples or lavender colors in there are what's also on the outer frame.
That's
but
right.
It's not,
yeah.
Usually.
And exactly. And I like this idea of having these little secrets in my paintings that, I don't know, people can get them if they want to ask about it and get into it. But I don't know. That's one part of why this is called Nemesis. You know, there's a few others. For example, you know how you can see the grid. You can kind of make out the grid that's happening, the lines that go across the canvas, and the way that these wax pastels are situated within it. And the interior grid actually is just slightly a different size than the exterior grid, just to kind of further emphasize that really subtle kind of wah-wah vibration effect and the difference between the two of them.
So there's also a kind of color study happening here, right? Almost like, the late Joseph Albers color studies about what we're seeing is not actually what we're seeing, what we think we're seeing because of the colors that it's next to. I mean, specifically to talk about palette, right? Is that something that you think about? Because that's almost kind of, I mean, I'm not saying Albers was like a scientist, but almost, right? A type of color study that tricks the eye, or we're not seeing exactly what we think we see.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always thinking about the way that we perceive color and how it's really difficult to define, you know, or impossible. And that's so fascinating to me. I'm super interested in how colors interact with one another, or how different people see different colors that they call the same. And I think painting is just a perfect example to explore color. You know, what better way?
Absolutely. Let's talk about observable universe. Another image there, which is, quite different. It almost seems like this is made of multiple canvases because the cross lines in the middle are so hard. It looks like it was kind of cut. Can you tell me a little bit about this one? Because this is a different kind of composition. It's both running. It seems that the composition is running towards the center and also the opposite way, that it's all moving towards the edges.
Right. A lot of people actually ask me if this piece is sewn. And it's something I'm curious about trying, but I think I like the idea of this still being on a really super flat, singular piece of canvas. But yeah, this one's a bit different in terms of changing the orientation of the way I was working every time I went to work on one quadrant of the square. I would turn the canvas, and I'm working flat against the table, and that movement is really just caused by where I start and finish applying the water. It's not really caused by gravity or anything like that, pulling it downwards. And I think something that really interests me is the idea of having grain applied to a material or an object. I feel like almost everything has a grain to it, and I think it comes from the process from which it's made. You know, it's a little hint or evidence of its birth.
Yeah, I think that's true. So, I mean, people are talking about, is this sewn because of this cross in the middle that's such a sharp line? Is that why?
Yeah, I think so. I think people see that really sharp line with something that looks so soft, and they associate it with something that's being sewn.
And the title observable universe, which is quite different than the others.
Yeah, observable universe. I guess I'm always thinking about questions bigger than me. I'm always kind of curious about the way the world works, and I like to think of these canvases that I'm working with as little analogies for the way the world works. You know, I'm applying rules to a canvas and reflecting on it and trying to understand it. So I think that's where that comes from.
I want to talk about blue curtains now, but also like to step back a little bit and talk about your sense of aesthetics and where it came from. Your father's a painter, so you grew up speaking the language somewhat of art, of aesthetics, would you say?
Yeah, you know, I grew up with my father, Doug Rena, being a painter my whole life, full-time painter. And so I grew up in his studio and smelling the oil paints and the turpentine and posing on rocks in the cold beach for him. And I think, you know, at a young age, he would bring me into the studio and ask me, what do you think of this? At like 5 years old. And I think that definitely did something with the way that I read a canvas and try to understand it, or the way I interpret it. Yeah. And speaking back to blue curtains, I guess, you know, my dad does a lot of figurative oil painting, and I went to design school. I had no really background in painting other than watching him paint. And being at design school, I learned a pretty methodical approach to creativity. And exiting, I was excited to make some paintings. I don't really know why, but I was inspired, maybe being in New York and having some friends that were painters. And so I began to try to make abstract work. That was what was most interesting to me, is the idea of making something that didn't exist ever before, you know? And I guess getting back to blue curtains, this methodical approach that I learned at design school is something that I wanted to apply to canvases. And I think blue curtains is a pretty good example of that, you know, seeing that it's these limits of application and process and how they're all integrated into a final image is something that fascinates me.
Yeah, that fascinates me too. And in this one, blue curtains, I mean, you know, similar to other work, there's something that's happening here optically or neurologically. I don't know what you'd call it. And, you know, but there's an effect that the mind can't quite wrap its head around, right? Or wrap its, you know, its perceptions around, you know. You talked earlier about different techniques that are being used, and we're talking so specifically about that. But then there's something else that begins to happen, which is, we don't know exactly what we're looking at, right? The viewer isn't quite sure. I mean, you know, and I'm having a better sense now because we're breaking down the process, but still the sum total is that there's something almost like an illusion, almost like op art, something that's beyond just what we're seeing, and it's also happening in, or maybe exclusively happening in our mind because of the way we're perceiving. Do you think about that a lot, or is that part of this process? Because it seems like part of one of the surprises, but it can't really just be a surprise. It's also such a big part of its experience, its effect on the viewer.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I think that's something I don't think about enough. You know, I'm oftentimes working in my mind with just process and tests and making things and pushing and making and editing down and sorting out and figuring out what happens next. But I think you're right. I think I'm definitely trying to evoke a feeling or something. You know, I don't want to just create an image or an idea. I want to make something that provides something that's a little bit more intangible than that.
And it is that. Yeah, and that's what's, I mean, that's what's beautiful about art, but yeah, this particular work, something intangible, right? Something that you can't quite grasp.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of these pieces kind of evoke that sensation directly from being based on this format of the square. And, you know, I'm fascinated with making these pieces that are really balanced between asymmetrical and symmetrical at the same time. You know, you can kind of define it as the same in a way, or these paintings can be both at the same time. And I think that creates a really odd sort of thing to look at, you know, almost uncomfortable but beautiful at the same time.
Yeah, I think so too. I love that actually idea. Devin, it's been great talking to you. I want to ask you one more question, a little off topic before we go. What are you reading at the moment?
Right. I'm reading a couple things. One of them is Art and Physics by Leonard Schlein. And, you know, I'm not super far into it, but essentially it's covering all of human civilization and the revolutions that have occurred in the industry of science and the industry of art, and how they're both kind of intertwined in these sort of suspicious sometimes ways.
That's interesting. That's Arts and Science. That's the name of the book?
It's called Art and Physics.
Art and Physics.
Yeah, it's a great book. You know, I think what I like about it most so far is that talking about artists and scientists, even from like over thousands of years ago, right? And it's really put me in the position of these artists from 1,000 years ago and defining what it meant to be an artist then. And it helps me better understand what it means to be an artist now.
I like that. Devin, thanks so much for talking with me, putting together this beautiful show for the listeners. There's links here, so hopefully they can go see the show before it closes, which is in late March. Devin, thanks so much for talking with me.
Yeah, Brainerd, thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.